in the fireside room this morning. The presenter will be Joel Oinas, and his subject will be The Creature with the Big Brain. And this is number 99-4. Let's go meet Joel now for the session.
Dear God, maker of all things, we consider today what you have made us to be. We very reluctantly admit that we are a part of creation dependent upon your plants and animals, air and rocks. Help us to see that with new and humble eyes. In Christ's name, amen. Well, this is kind of the conclusion of the first week, and I suppose I ought to let you in on sort of the confused way I prepared on this. For this, the first week was supposed to be sort of assessing our situation, how we got to here. Next week is going to be trying to focus a little bit on the future and what science and our faith face as we go into the next millennium. I think there will be three sessions that are really specifically focused on that. And there are other people who said that just learning some science was important. So a couple things we didn't do this week that I had ready were to do a little completely amateurish astronomy. If people are willing to wait till 10 o'clock, we can do that right here in the confines of the village.
This is a great time because there's no moon.
Yes, and I did look at that, and we have two planets to observe in the evening, and some really interesting stars. And we also get a chance to do a little more manual astronomy geometry to see how it is that we're moving. So we'll do that, and then probably a session on light. Anyway, we'll get back to today. Let's review just a little bit. The first session was on the difference between the way science amasses and organizes knowledge and the way the church does. And I suggested that science builds one grudging brick at a time, doesn't really put anything into place in its structure of knowledge until it has consensus. The church, on the other hand, is obligated, because of its role in telling us who we are and what we're to be about, of building a large framework. And the experience of between church and science, we talked about that day, was church having sort of acquiesced in a very intricate structure, and then science for the last 500 years sort of uncovering foundations that the church hadn't considered and blowing down different wings of the theological house. The next day we talked about the cosmos and how the emerging science of astronomy finally settled that the Earth was not the center of the world, and the celestial, the heavens were not the perfect representation of God's realm. And that was difficult for the church, but they did sort of assimilate it and move on. The third session we talked about how the church entered the 19th century with a natural theology in place, a constant natural theology, how nature never changes. And it was around 1860 that Darwin published The Origin of Species, suggesting that nature is changing all the time, and that's been a very difficult one to cope with. And I have to tell you this story. Tom found in the old, there's a book called Holden Critters, published in
74.
By Ernie Zorb, who was a naturalist up here, sort of a curmudgeon. And he talked about, he mentioned just in passing, do you have it with you?
I don't think I have it, no.
He mentioned in passing one of the excesses of the church's natural theology. And it was probably a Northern European.
French Jesuit.
1754. During Lent, there was just not enough fish to go around, and this Jesuit priest declared that because of the scales on his tail, the beaver was actually all fish and could be eaten during Lent. So you can see right there, it's sort of an introduction on how we often use what we think we know about the natural world for our own sort of arcane purposes. I had never heard that one before.
So. Geese also got in there somewhere, didn't it? Because of the goose
scales. Scales.
Yeah, the scales.
Scales on their legs, maybe?
Yeah.
Amazing. And so here we've arrived at, I think I said that this was where science botches anthropology. And if there are any anthropologists in here, my apologies. I'm not thinking about the science of anthropology, which is the investigation of human cultures and, you know, from the beginning of time on. But I'm thinking about the church as anthropology, where we have an understanding of what we're for and why God made us and what we are to do. And there has never been anything like that achieved by science. Tolstoy said science cannot teach us how to live. And the question, what are we, is still a very open question for science these days. Science has had a difficult time with that question. Now, they've been done well over the last 400 years with anatomy and physiology. They can tell us about our parts and our systems and the functions of those systems. And in the last 200 years, biochemistry has begun to tell us an awful lot. Biochemistry gave birth to the genetic data, the explosion in research in genetic data and finding out not just about structures, but about information. How is the information that creates the creature from egg and embryo on, how does that information really do that? And we're engaged in that right now. And that is the list of just about all of science concerning human beings that we have any sort of consensus on. And I said earlier that the consensus is really the thing that defines a science. And I held up this little chart here. So this is an example of scientific consensus. Lots of people recognize that as the periodic table. You find the same periodic table in Russia, in Asia, in Africa. This is the same, and they all say if you go to the planet Zork, it'll be there. The whole universe knows about this. Might be a little different form, but there's consensus. When it comes to who we are and what we are for, it isn't there. Science has attempted, though. And it either fails as science, and the examples I can think of right off are Freudian theories of psychology, which are in very serious disrepute these days. And here, another one, IQ. IQ is invented to measure so-called intelligence, but it's never been defined. And the most you can say about IQ tests is IQ is what the IQ tests measure. Which is sort of circular and is not really qualifying as science. So it's failed as science. Or it fails to achieve consensus. There are many investigations in human behavior and origins and purpose that are extremely scientific in their method. But as soon as a paper is published, there's a paper vehemently contesting it. And I'll give you a few examples, and then we'll move on to the exercise for today, which is, I'll say more about that. For instance, there's the question of the mind. Is the mind an illusion, a mere illusion of the functioning of the brain? And that's a sort of a reductionist, mechanistic view. Or are the pieces create more than the parts? Is there something more to the mind? There's the debate about what our motivation is in life. Is it self-interest? And mechanistic folks will say, yeah, you are interested at the very bottom in survival. That's all you're interested in. And society is only sort of people with enlightened self-interest saying that if you succeed, if we all succeed, then my life is going to be better. And we're motivated purely by self-interest. There are others that say, and it's very hotly contested these days, isn't it? That there's some say, no, there's altruism. There may even be an altruist gene that human beings and other animals actually do things for others that are not self-interest motivated. And they have scientific tests of that. But there's no consensus. There's a disagreement about that. Natural biology has said that animals are here mainly to eat and breed. Well, nobody's satisfied with that in talking about human beings. You know, people that suggest that are just, people are very uncomfortable accepting that as the all that science can say about that. And we have, you know, we have various debates about, scientists have observed in our sexual habits that we observed a variety of sexual orientations, and some say whatever is natural, then it's hotly contested by people with other agendas saying, no, there's deviant behavior involved in that. And then we have been eating for how long, and is there any agreement on what we should eat? And are the diets that we pick up weekly and read about, are they science? There's no, a nutritionist will say there is consensus on this, but as a society, we haven't allowed that yet. Okay, another example, and this has to do with how it should have been an easy thing to solve, and it's just a tiny example. After World War II, in our efforts at reparations after the war, our dairy surplus was made in the non-fat dry milk and shipped to countries in the developing world. And people got sick. And the conclusion of the scientists now was, well, they're not fixing it right. They're using dirty water. It was only after they, you know, they actually went over and looked closely that they discovered that 80% of the world doesn't have lactase in adulthood. They can't digest milk. Kids all have it up until the age 2. But Northern Europeans and Americans and people especially from Scandinavian countries evidently come from a branch of the Indo-Europeans who for a long time lived without sunlight, and they lived in cloudy climates, and they lived without green vegetables. And so what happened is their pigmentation disappeared. That sunlight has something to do with being able to assimilate calcium. I don't know that exactly what the mechanism is, but what happened is they became very pale and had these windows for the sunlight here, able to assimilate calcium. And the people who were able to drink the products from their cows and drink it for longer in life were more biologically successful. They weren't sick as much, they didn't die early. And so we have a whole race, a subgroup of human beings that are oddities in that they've lost their pigment and they can drink milk in it as adults. And they all moved to Wisconsin. But when they tried to give their milk away, they didn't even, it was a long time before they considered that, well, maybe other people cannot drink milk. And so it was an embarrassing thing for our scientific community. Another that I run into in as an educator in school, there's a new learning theory called constructivism. Some of you may have heard of it. It was new to me as a graduate student in education. And essentially it says that words and concepts don't just fall into your ears full of meaning. That their meaning depends on what you have up here already and what you bring to it. For instance, if you didn't grow up a Lutheran, somebody says the word grace. You have to work to construct the meaning. You have to call on your resources. You have to ask questions. You have to find out what it's about. But as soon as that became a viable theory in education, there was an immediate and visceral reaction saying, what you're saying is people are making up the meanings for things. We've lost our absolutes. There's a Tao out there. There's something that is true eternally forever. And there was a conservative reaction to constructivism. You can't even use the word in some educational circles. Another example, and probably the most sinister, was that after Darwin and the Whigs, the political and the scientific community in the 1860s and 70s began to demonstrate that natural selection did occur and it probably happened with human beings, the science of eugenics was born, which said, well, if it happens with animals, and we've been doing this with our cows and our goats and our horses, why not do it with people? And eugenics means good breeding, I think, good origins. And so they suggested, or even societies, eugenic societies, that would suggest that we need to get the smartest people, and you know who they were. They're always the people that thought of the idea. Get the smartest people together and, you know, breed, make good selections, and we will end up with superior people. And of course, the sinister side of that is, well, there are some people that we really don't want to be breeding. And the more they looked at it, the more they said, well, those are the people that breed too much already. And it wasn't long before German theologians were combining that with an idea of an Aryan ancestor race. And we all know the tragedy and the horrible result of that misguided science. And it is still afoot and alive. We've seen it in Africa in the last few years. We've seen it in, Kosovo. This belief that, ethnic cleansing is a direct descendant of the science of eugenics. That our neighbors, and it doesn't make any sense scientifically, because although populations can be compared on the average, and you may find differences in the way they solve particular problems, the fact is that it does not predict what any individual of the white race, the Asian race, African-American races, does not predict how they're going to do with each other as individuals. It's completely useless. It has no practical value, but serves ideology. And so there is no consensus when science talks about what are we. It's either that the subject, and these are the three reasons, I think, to kind of summarize. The subject is, in a real sense, the same as the observer. The people who observe and try to do science on people are people themselves. That is a scientific problem. The variables in human behavior are legion. Ecology says you cannot do one thing. And when you're looking at people and you're looking at their motivations, think about it. I've always been upset with how every ancient culture was concerned with fertility goddesses. It just doesn't make sense. That's why all these little clay figures are there. That was the only concern. You know, an ancient hunter would wake up in the morning and say, "Gotta do something with the fertility guy today. You know, we've gotta make sure the crops go and everything fine." And I think it was an assumption and a simplification that helped rationalize our belief in our own superiority. So that's the second. That human motivation, behavior, are legion. You will not find a physicist who tries to deal with one or two variables at a time giving any credence to the conclusions of people who look at a clay figure and posit human motivations for the creating of it. There are just too many variables. Okay? And the third reason, the prejudices and the hidden objectives are so deeply buried or deeply held or politically entailed, they're so dangerous or horrible to consider that they can't even be conducted. And that is why eugenics has become taboo for scientists. Anybody who even attempts something that may be pitting one race against another, the scientific community, they're pariah in the scientific community. It's very difficult to do that. And I'm not sure it will ever succeed as a science, and that may be all to the good. So I'm thinking that's why no consensus has emerged yet. So we're stuck when we talk about human beings, and what are we? And what are we for? There is no consensus from science. Theology, on the other hand, this is the part of the house that we love building. And we have all sorts of ideas about what we're here for, the praise of God. We're here to love our neighbor. We're here to tend the garden. Those are all wonderful descriptions of our vocation. And there's something everyone recognizes as true and right about them, even though it's very hard to scientifically verify. There are plenty of options and really no consensus. But hey, it's okay. It's not science, right? We can debate and hold these opinions and these ideas and know in our guts that there is truth to them. But as far as producing a verifiable, repeatable experiment that we can ship over to Asia or to the planet Zork, it's not in the cards yet. And so this is Saturday. It's the end of the week. This is the end of this part of the series, and we should be doing something a little less stressful. And so what we're going to do here, and we have 40 minutes to keep sort of in touch with the theme of science and the issue of yesterday, our place in the created community. We're going to have a trial. We're going to try to look at the human animal from several new perspectives in the expectation that we will discover something about ourselves and what we're for and what we do. And it's going to be a mock trial. And what I want you to do is form legal teams of two or three. You are going to represent a plaintiff. You're going to choose a creature, not human. It'll be an extinct creature. We should have at least one domestic animal. We should have at least one member of the flora community. And if anybody wants to serve as sort of the defendant's team, we can do that. I think we probably need somebody that would be willing to be the advocate. But we will choose plaintiffs and then choose a species, okay? Choose a plaintiff species. So get together with somebody, choose an animal or a plant, present, past. And what you're going to do is to help prepare a case. And prepare a case and hear the argument, and then we'll hear the arguments in turn. So I'll give you a few minutes to pick an animal, then we'll get together to discuss how we're going to bring the case for. You know, this is our legal team meeting. And then we will hear the arguments in turn. Then the charge, this is the charge, that the present holder of the office of global steward, a.k.a. human beings, is being challenged for incompetence and for replacement. Okay? I'll write some of this on the board as you're thinking. And this is what we'll do. This is the kind of thing your legal team has to prepare. Human beings are being charged with failure to adequately steward the earth. And we will begin, with a formal complaint. And it'll be personal for your plaintiff, a personal complaint, and also a global complaint. And you'll say, my client has been injured this way, this way, this way, and furthermore, others in this way have been injured. So, a formal complaint, explain how the actions are not consistent with the expectation of the steward. We're going to assume that all the animals know who's got the big brain and who's been given dominion. All right? We'll assume they know that, and they've been watching for a long time. And how, so your second is to explain how they are not consistent with the expectations of a steward. Three, you're going to request specific action against the defendant. Okay. Restrictions, injunctions, reparations, maybe even punishment. Okay. Four, you're going to decide for or against their removal. If you decide for the removal of the human beings as the stewards of the earth, you have to nominate another creature. Okay? Yeah. Now, that's kind of complicated. I'll write a summary of that on the board there. But first thing you need to do is get in your legal teams and choose a plaintiff. Okay, this Saturday. So you need to have a little fun.
But you said you do need a team that's...
Yeah, if you want to be a solo...
What?
I volunteered to be on the defense.
Oh, okay. Well, here's some paper in case you want to write some notes. And I'm gonna write this on the board while you begin to think.
Anybody do a legal brief? Well, it's not a brief, but let me tell you what's happening here. Okay, we have these groups right here are working on their client. They have clients and they're working on their prosecutorial stuff. This group here is from the Jimmy Carter Center. We're going to make sure that there's due process, but they're neutral. This group here has decided to be the defense team.
We're going to win.
Well, what you need to decide is, in order to be plaintiffs, you have to say, and this is basic law, okay, I have been injured.
Okay.
And I can demonstrate my injury. Okay. Then the defense and you have to have specific facts to back that up. And if you don't have specific facts, then then the law says you have no quote-unquote standing, because that's what happens when one of the, and I'll give you an example of this, when the first environmental cases came before the court, the Sierra Club or whatever, on, for instance, the cutting down the redwood trees in California. The court would say, what standing do you have? I mean, how are you personally injured? So they had to create a legal theory saying, they process, my environment is part of the national park system, mm-hmm. and the beauty of the United States and the beauty of California and all of that. That means something to me, and they created this legal theory that they, as third parties, could intervene and say, yes, we have rights too in this, and we need to be heard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the irony in all this is that animals don't have a voice in our court system.
Well, they do. They do.
Only if we advocate for them, right?
Only if we actively choose to, the Sierra Clubs and Greenpeace and some of those that say yes, animals and children don't have voices. We need to act for them, and so we stand in their place. And this is what we, like the wolves being introduced into, Glacier National Park and some of the other things.
Yeah. One comment I have is that if this court were ever to take place, I have a sneaky suspicion I know who the judge would be. God. That might be an enormous authority for correctness and probably sympathetic to the animals. One that looks like a how are we doing? Are we ready to go ahead?
Doug Beetle. Okay, what injury have Doug Beetle had?
They have been
Remember, this defense team, there are three professors and a pastor. They're all from the state of Iowa. They have more roads in Iowa than any other state.
Must be working by the hour.
Now, I will tell you at the beginning that I think we'll regard these as sort of opening statements.
Yes.
And if you can make these points, how the stewardship officer's negligence, the personal injury, the complaint, personal, what's happened, how that is negligence on the part of a stewardship officer, request action, injunction, reparation, say I would like them removed, and then do a little politics, say I would like to nominate the turtle.
So the turkey
the turtle. That was the animal I was going to advocate for. And I'll give you an example. I'll do that. I represent all sorts of terrestrial turtles, and their complaint is the abusive treatment they receive on human highways. We can't help our instinct to pull in our heads and our feet and lay there until the danger passes. You provide us no options with your completely incomprehensible automobiles. We crawl out on the road, boom, boom, boom. We pull in our heads and wait, and there is absolutely no escape. Furthermore, in many, many places we have to cross roads, and we go from lowlands up for, well, we don't have to get turtles do. We have to get to the high land. And many of those roads have concrete barriers that run for miles. And we have no way to complete our natural cycle. So that's
haven't you ever heard of natural selection? We're just helping to improve your breeds.
Stewardship officers should at least consider our needs. Our corpses have been littering American highways or human highways for years, and nobody has done anything about it. Negligence. I request that human beings at least modify their highways so we can cross them
that when they see a turtle in the road, they have to come to a complete stop until we put our head out across the road. And if they do that, I'll be content with their continuation as stewards. Okay, let's go on around.
The individual is supposed to...
If you have a team, you can pick a spokesperson. We have like 15, 20 minutes. I'm going to take notes. And I will function as sort of an uninformed judge.
Okay, all righty. We are representing... there are many beetles in the world, and we are the dung beetles, scarabs in old times, other areas of the world. But dung beetles' job is to process manure into the soil, turn it into the soil, which adds organic matter, adds fertilizer, adds carrying capacity for water, and in general makes for a healthier soil conditions. Healthier soil conditions are necessary for, increased carrying capacity for water, water to filter through in the grassland. So essentially, this is a watershed issue. Yes, essentially, this is a watershed issue. Also involved would be how much grass could grow. So, the stewards have chosen to use pesticides. Pesticides to kill pests, which actually aren't pests. They're our friendly neighborhood lawn and garden people.
Oh, this is very
good. Fewer than 2% are pests.
Tilling in. The pesticides are sprayed on, sometimes injected, sometimes ingested. There are a variety of wonderful ways to get a pesticide into a herding ungulate, such as a cow, or you could also talk about a goat, or a camel's probably not a herding ungulate, but anyway, back to those animals. The pesticide is eliminated through the dung. Dung beetles come, ingest the dung, and they're done. Dung beetles are done. So we request an injunction against the use of the harmful pesticides. And it is very complex. And I don't know, we might still want to talk about the steward, I think, needs an oversight committee. So we could leave the steward in place with an oversight committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, is that which team? Show me that legal team. All right, what's the legal team in the rear there? Yeah, do you have any questions from questions from the defense?
Well, the case has been so weak so far, we're waiting to hear what the rest is.
Huh? Oh. Okay. Alright. Order!
May it please the court.
We represent the bovine persuasion, that of both dairy cows and beef cattle. We charge that humans have treated us inhumanely or inanimally, and we feel through their incompetence that we have suffered greatly. Our life has been neglected by a decreasing life expectancy of our species. In more developing countries, especially the United States, it's very common for a dairy cow to have a life expectancy of 7 to 9 years, where in other countries, our own relatives can live for up to close to 30 years. We're denied a life of pleasure and contentment by not being able to graze in dairy farms where we live on the slab. Artificial insemination is not pleasure. We've endured a separation of family and the breeding that the humans have subjected us to has made us shorter, overweight, and we've had all sorts of other problems associated with
butter problems.
Yes. We are moved to tears, babe. We found the charge of incompetence is that as far as those of us who have been relegated to a feedlot, it takes more energy to produce meat on us than it would be for some other way, for some other animal, some other species. So we think that there's an incredible waste of energy in producing us for the purpose of beef. We think we have a good case here because there we have excellent precedents. Genesis 6:5 talks about how the wickedness of humankind so distorted and damaged not only their own souls, but that of all the animals of creation, that the Creator had to destroy all of us. Lutherans continue.
I'm glad you brought this into the case.
Yeah, we didn't have a single theological.
Even after
that great devastation that occurred, the Creator still said the heart of humankind is evil, but God promises never to at least destroy every living creature, which pretty much refers to the animals again.
So you're, let me just for clarification, you're making the case that that after the flood, there was sort of an acknowledgement of human negligence and incompetence.
That's right. Absolutely.
And that in order to protect you and your kind, there was some restraint on the part of the Creator.
That's correct. Well, not every living creature will be destroyed again. And every living creature has always been referred to as separate from humans. And also that we have a complaint that it also says that they shall not eat of the flesh with the life in it. That is the blood, and we all know that blood sausage is quite common for people. So we think that there's just... Anyway, what we are seeking... Because we have a precedent established a long time ago by the Supreme Judge, we think that the action we would like to take is not necessarily to have humans replaced because they have a role as stewards, but we'd like to see a great reduction in the overall population that would allow us to have more acreage for us to live free. Free-ranging cattle and cows is the way it should be. Stop all artificial insemination and keep our families together.
You need just a time, I wish the other side would move along.
Quit eating.
All right, it looks like we have two more groups. Maybe this would be a good time for this group to speak.
We represent the buffalo, and our complaint is that the mankind has driven us almost to the point of extinction, and that they also have destroyed our habitat. They wantonly, maliciously murdered us, and did so without full utilization of the product. They left the carcasses to be rot on the plains. They took only parts of us, and they destroyed our habitat by turning it into farmland, which was never meant to be. They're utilizing too much water now to grow the crops on there. They are producing dust bowls. We request an action that they be ordered to desist from the destruction of the grasslands, or few remaining grasslands, that they be ordered to vacate the Midwest Plains states and restore the grasslands that were once knee-high throughout the Middle West. We ask that mankind be removed as a steward, and that the first bears and wolves be nominated as a steward.
What do the cows have to say about that? The cows need to be herded by predators, or any herding ungulate needs to be herded by predators, bunched up and
we used to have horns that would help take care of wolves.
So the dairy cows want the wolves in charge, huh?
Give us our horns back and we'll talk about it.
Dairy cows, it's true, isn't it, that all dairy cows are born with horn, they're polled?
Yes.
So it's a painful procedure for...
Just one, as the International Observers of the Jimmy Carter Center, I just ask that you all respect each other, and I believe that my hope is that that the animals call these people the humankind, I think that's what he likes to refer to, and that the humankind will not refer to the others as pests and bugs and...
Other kind.
I just have to say that so there's a
non-human kind. Our lower kind.
Subhuman kind.
This is what I'm
seeing very much.
Order. The term is the developing kind.
Just by their names, if they like.
Or the underdeveloped.
Thank you for that observation. We need to move on to the next group, the final.
Are we going to have a word before the session is over?
You have like 3 minutes, okay?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, Your Honor, and international observers, my client is the whale. The whale has been driven almost to extinction and was hunted for years, 100 years plus, by mankind. Their recent example of we have been neglected, and recently there has been a killing by a tribe of humans off the Washington coast that killed one of our own. In addition, we are suffering from malnutrition, and a large number of us have been beached on the Pacific coast for reasons we don't understand. Might be malnutrition, might be some other things. Possibly global warming. Mankind has been responsible for producing too much carbon dioxide from the emission of their automobiles, and it is warming the planet. In addition, they have created a hole in the ozone layer, which is also contributing to the destruction of the natural environment, the oceans. We would like to... our proposal is that there be an injunction against the International Whaling Commission, that they can no longer kill us whenever they choose to, and that there be a reduction in the carbon dioxide levels by use of more mass transit, and reduce the number of cars being produced, and also that mankind look into preventing or the global warm or facilitate the progression of the global warming that we see as a real threat to protection of the ocean, which is our home.
So you're asking that the action would be that humans take some sort of stewardship, do some repair.
Yes. Reparations. Essentially repair work.
Okay.
And I have to see, nomination. Well, if They haven't done a very good job over the years. However, there is some promise of them reversing their trend. So I would either make a, we would like to, our vote would probably be an oversight commission with animals who would, who have recently been endangered to review.
Review of voice and vote symptoms. Okay.
Correct.
Oversight, okay. All right, thank you very much. We're out of time.
We need to hear from
The defense. And
I'll set the thing briefly at the beginning and then call on my worthy colleagues here to do the zone. We're so glad you invoked the word of God as an authority on this, because
we are expecting more than just
theological argument. We didn't introduce it, and we have not planned on doing this, but since the are worthy, and it was really, it was good to hear, because our concern, of course, is with the cattle and domestic animals whose population numbers are at an all-time high, and exist only because we have allowed you to exist. So, we recognize that the buffalo has some legitimate grievances, but we would have never been able to produce and nurture the cattle herds that the buffalo simply run amok on the land. But let me quote from Psalm 8, because this, I think, helps set the theme. O Lord, our sovereign, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens, out of the mouths of babes and infants. You have founded a bulwark because of your foes, to silence the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars you've established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them? Yet you have made them only a little lower than God, and crowned them with glory and honor. You have given them dominion over all the works of your hands. You have put all things under their feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field, and the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea. Whatever passes along the paths of the sea.
Objection! It's a rude comment.
How majestic is your name in all the earth? I don't pass to
that. I think Carter Group's going to stand up for that one.
Prejudicial. It's the Bible.
You had more to say.
I do just want to notice that none of the animals swore on the Bible when they began their testimony. But we want to
know how
stand.
The cows got
well, this
a
hold is our opening statement. Opening statement, you don't swear.
Thank you.
You know what the next case would be?
Order.
Bovine anthrax.
We haven't finished our...
We have a good sum. I have a couple points.
Please.
And then I'll pass it on to my colleagues. First of all, I think it's interesting that all of the arguments that the non-humans have brought up are arguments that humans have come up with also, because we're a sensitive group. And we have realized over a long, I mean, God gave us dominion, didn't give us a rule book, basically said, okay, these are yours, you name them, you take care of them. So it's taken us a while to figure out some stuff, and we admit we have made some mistakes.
But the whale population is growing.
But the whale population is growing again. We came up with the idea of composting our lives. I mean, so we are changing. We're changing.
The young beetle's going to put up with this.
We ask you to be understanding that we are a young species, and we are learning how to do this stuff, and we are learning. But I think what's important to understand here is that most of the mistakes we've made have been because we're just acting naturally. You don't get mad at the lion for killing the gazelle, because lions that's what they were created to do. Human beings were created to be creators. We were created to build things. All the stuff that we've done has just come out of what we naturally are. So, we're just doing what we were created to do. And the other thing that I think is interesting, and then I'll pass this on, is you blame all of humans. And it seems to me that actually just a small percentage of humans that you're really upset with. If you look at the vast number of human beings who are starving, the vast number of human beings who are, quite frankly, not doing very well on behalf of them, I am insulted.
Yeah.
You have accused these people who have virtually no power of destroying your lives. It's been a very small percentage, those who are in power. who have created all of these problems, and most of humanity does not support what they have done. So I think in the name of fairness, you should tell the whole truth, and the whole truth is that the majority of human beings have not participated in all of this destruction.
Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I hate to say this, but I think, frankly, this whole affair is out of order. What is clearly the case and has been established for the last 200 years, at least from the Enlightenment on, is that only human beings have rights. I have yet to meet a cow who can reciprocate the rights that I might be able to grant or to acknowledge in my colleague Jennifer or in my colleague Julie. When you are able to care for me when I am suffering, then I will acknowledge your right to be represented in this court. But until you are able to represent my rights and to reciprocate, unfortunately, it is a long legal tradition that you as creatures simply don't have these rights, and thus this is
objection, Your Honor. There is standing before the court, presidents of Sierra Club, Friends of the Earth. There are a whole host of
turtles, dung beetles, bovine, and buffalo are not endangered species. They're not covered by these laws.
That is not.
But
quite no more milkshakes for this guy.
We have so many other arguments that we could make.
We need to conclude in the next couple minutes so we can eat earlier.
Here's Julie.
I hope a lot of you are on the menu.
Turtle
soup, dung beetle hors d'oeuvres, a big
Your Honor, if
feet.
It pleases, I'd like to call a witness for the defense.
Sure.
I'd like to call Mr. Vermin.
Are you speaking for a group of vermin?
I'm speaking for a group of vermin, weeds, other forms of life. We were concerned that this has really perpetuated this anthropocentric dualism of human versus lower kind. And we want to know that there are members of lower kind who are fully in solidarity with the superior kind, namely spotted knapweed, cockroaches,
cholera.
There are lots of forms of the natural world that are doing quite well and owe their existence and are very grateful to their existence to the actions of humankind. And we're really in favor of multiculturalism and diversity, not only among human beings, but among the animal world. And if it were not for the action of human beings, we wouldn't have dandelions, we wouldn't have tumbleweeds over in North America, we wouldn't have spotted knapweed. So we are a class of animals and other kind that are very grateful and dependent on the good actions and wish those actions to continue. So we oppose the nomination to remove.
Okay. Any other comments?
Well, there are several comments we could make in relationship to each of the specific arguments, but I think we'll forego those.
As the opening hearing here, I guess I was calling, it's incumbent on me to make a decision. And hearing all the arguments, you can stay, stewards. However, you will be subject to a weekly oversight meeting with the creatures here, and you must attend immediately to the reparations. You have a lot of work to do. So
do you think the majority of human beings pay the price for this?
Well,
we're already doing pretty poorly.
The appeal process.
A fourth of us live on less than a dollar a day.
Do we need to continue this?
We simply can't afford such reparations.
They have a recess here.
Injunctive relief, Your Honor, was requested. Injunctive relief, which was to cease and desist actions rather than pay actual monetary.
Cease and desist.
Well, unfortunately, the cow population is going to dramatically drop. I mean, there are virtually no domesticated cows, no domesticated chickens. You have wiped out their species right there.
No.
Okay. Unintended consequences. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Once we get our pleasure back, we shall be popular. All right, Bera, clear of this courtroom. All right, thank you very much.
much. I see that we haven't really settled anything. But I hope it was a chance to look at a fresh perspective and to uncover other issues that are going on. We didn't hear from many of the dependent species, the domestic dog, or the Norway rat. We didn't hear from any plants.
Yeah.
Spotted knotweed.
And the point is, it's a very good point to bring up the question of rights. And of course, the answer to that is that rights are a determination of the human legal system.
Well, this is a legal human code.
Yeah. That may not have. May
you
not
were God if you call us in a theological court.
Yeah, I wish I could have played the part of God better. I have an idea it would have been autographed and these people would be a lot less happy.